Hello and welcome to the Enlightened Medicine Show with Dr. Valerie Olmsted, the holographic physician. And my guest tonight is Brian Flournoy of Making It All Click. So welcome to the show, Brian.
Hello, thank you. Thank you for welcoming. I'm happy to be here.
This is going to be so much fun. And I have an echo in my phone. I'm on a landline, too, so I don't know what's what's happening with that. I've got quite a delay here. But anyway, Brian is putting together a visionary series. So we're going to talk about that in a minute. But if you would first give people a little bio about yourself, Brian, that'd be great.
Okay. Well, I'm a registered pharmacist by trade and started developing my intuitive ability in animal communication, because in the Midwest, that was the only way I could interact with people intuitively and start approaching the concept of spirituality and life after death without scaring people away. I'm the son of a Pentecostal apostolic pastor, and although intuitive gifts run in the family, because my father's a pastor of the church, it's generally put in the context of being a gift of God and used in the context of the congregation. But I believe that as time has passed on, my parents have seen nothing but good results and feel very comfortable with the use of my gifts outside of the church setting.
Mm.
And so I also discovered that I was a medical intuitive when I was starting picking signals from people as they approached the pharmacy counter with their prescriptions, and I got kind of good at figuring it out when people were having drug interactions, and then got to the point where I started calling physicians and asking them to reconsider the dosages on medications, because intuitively I was picking up that something was wrong, but I've always found a creative way to assert that and not be confrontational. So I've been pretty fortunate.
Boy, I'm just trying to imagine what it would be like if you were calling a physician and saying, you know, I just have a hunch that this is not working well.
Well, you know, it's funny because, you know, because it's a higher purpose theme, I have the help of my guides working on either side. And one time I was holding a prescription and the husband was dropping it off for his wife and she was at home, and my guides were saying it's still not quite right, and then the husband said, oh, by the way, she just went on dialysis. And I said, oh, my God, that's it. This antibiotic is cleared only through the kidneys. And I called the doctor back a second time, and I said, well, the husband was just, oh, don't tell me. She said, that's right. She just went on dialysis, cut the dose in half. So it happens like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know, you know, from my experience in the hospitals, there's a lot of things that we need to do as a team to make sure that the patient is getting what they need. And, you know, things get forgotten.
Right.
You know, people are people. So it's good that you have that.
Now, the funny thing about it is that wasn't a mistake that would have fallen under my personal liability as a pharmacist. And I probably would not have picked up on that one unless I modified my affirmation to give my intuition permission to look beyond the object of information that was really meant for me to know. At a certain point, I decided I just wanted to be in a position to do the highest good, no matter whose fault it was. And then I started getting a lot more information.
Oh, absolutely. And that's a good point. You know, I have a lot of people that listen to the show that that are psychic and that do their own medical intuitive things and readings and things like that. And so that's a really good point to mention, that you had to go beyond and look at the highest good. And I think that especially for medical intuitives, if they would do that a little bit more, then, you know, things might be a heck of a lot easier both for doctors and their patients.
Right. Because it'd be probably a little more continuity in the information. Things would probably make a little more sense, because you'd be open to getting just that little bit more information that nudges the other team player in the healthcare scenario to go, I think I know where you're getting at.
Yeah. Boy, wouldn't that help in all aspects of life, too?
Right. And and I'm learning how to find parking spots and everything.
Well, now that's a pretty good one. I'll have to talk to you about that, although I do it half the time.
Yeah.
You know, I need to work on it a little bit more, but that's a helpful skill. Hey, Brian, I really want you to explain something about your visionary series that you're doing, and I found it to be quite unique, and I think that there's a lot of people who are listening that would really like to tune in to what you're doing and, you know, visit your site, because there are so many fascinating people out there, and you're finding them, so please go ahead and explain that.
Exactly, and you're definitely one of them, which is why I called you, and I'm so grateful that you gave me an interview and shared your energy and information. And my website is called Making It All Click, and you can Google it any way you want, but put spaces in between, and I should come up number one or two. And the show or the series that I'm working on right now is called Visionary Series. And it means I'm using my guides to help me intuitively find very inspirational guests and people that are doing pretty good things regarding, you know, helping advance global consciousness. And generally these are bestsellers and people who do workshops all over the country and the world. And at first I was comfortable with it, and then I thought, wow, this seems a little elitist. You know, I don't want to exclude anyone just based purely on their success level. But the guides assured me, they said, I mean, Valerie, you were in the list. They said, no, it's important to kind of concentrate on people who are making a global contribution on a certain level because they really achieved a visionary perspective. And by altering the standard interview into a conversation that talks about their personal experience, It makes it easier for the listener to identify with the visionary experience within and take on a visionary perspective and feel comfortable letting their light shine and making a contribution, you know, on their level, kicking it up a notch and in a quantum physics way. And so I took a lot of courage, and I've got people on the show. I'm going to be actually interviewing tomorrow Fred Allen Wolf, one of the physicists on What the Bleep.
Cool.
I was going to be interviewing Will Arntz, who is the filmmaker and director of What the Bleep, and Dr. Hagelin, another physicist on What the Bleep. And I just got finished interviewing William Tiller. And I'm going to be interviewing Dr. Dispenza. He was on What the Bleep. And it's not all about What the Bleep, but it's about a lot of, you know, visionary people and a lot of Hay House authors, too. I like the Hay House Institution. I like them as a group of practitioners, and like James Twyman on the Moses Code. I just got finished interviewing Neil Donald Walsh, and I just got an excellent lineup of visionaries. And everyone knows that this series is really meant to be a platform to motivate the individual out there to find the visionary perspective within. So it's a lot of fun.
Well, and I find it amazing that you are doing this for a number of reasons. First of all, I like what your guides have said to you, because every single person who's on the planet is important with this ascension process that we're going through and everything else, and really changing the way humanity has been behaving for all these millennia. And so when you look at what other people are doing and the things that they're trying to accomplish and get all the people together, it's such a huge team effort, and we're all doing it in different ways. And it just blew me away that you are doing something to actually inspire the masses who think they don't have anything to give. That's important, and I really congratulate you for that, and it's very impressive, because I don't see a lot of people doing that.
You know, and I'm fortunate that it comes across that way with everyone, including you, and I have to commend many of the very popular, very successful international New York Times bestsellers, internationally renowned speakers, and people like Byron Katie, who is in Europe right now, and she says, as soon as I get into the States, I'm going to call you and give you the interview and touch base. And Bruce Lipton, he's in New Zealand. He said, when I get in, and then Gary Bernard, and So, you know, everyone really is getting into the spirit of what the Visionary Series as a program is about. And truly, it's a process that requires inspirational people to really feel, you know, the basis, the rudimentary importance of it all.
Yeah, that's an awesome thing. And, you know, I keep looking at that. Every time I look at your site, I keep going, this is really cool. And I think that there are probably a lot of people out there that would like to copy what you're doing, if for nothing else, because it's fascinating to be able to call people up or send them an email and say, hey, I want to interview you. That's a lot of fun.
Exactly. And, you know, the conversation is inspiring, and in fact, it's such a robust program, and it's so important that I accumulate a collection of interviews, you know, that are relatively recent. I started January 2008, and I'm literally interviewing someone every day. So I get a phone call every day from
Wow.
someone like you, Valerie, and we sit down and we talk about what's going on and how their work is changing in response to the transition of the planet. And we put it all into context. And everyone knows who else I'm talking to, and everyone knows how to chime in. And so it's really fun to watch, to see people intuitively chime in, knowing exactly where they fit in, no matter how big the personality is. And everyone comes across with great spirit, great inspiration, and humility.
Yeah, that's an important thing, because I don't think that would have happened even 10 years ago.
Oh.
You know, I've seen a lot of spiritual people that have kind of fallen by the wayside with ego. And so to have all these people that are now coming across with humility is a sign of the changing times, and I think it's really important for people to know that.
Right. You know, I was just talking to Sandra Ingerman a couple of days ago, shaman, and you know, I was saying to her, we were talking, and we talk more often. And I said, you know, it's really important also that we make sure that the establishment within the consciousness community doesn't start acting like the institutionalized media of mainstream. And so I also was very careful on how I picked people in combination there to formulating what the Visionary Series would be collectively and as individual conversations, because I wanted to create opportunities for people to interact, communicate, and cross paths. People that would normally cross paths with each other, create this series so there would be something in common and create more crossroads.
And, you know, that's something that I'm seeing in the travels. You know, we just started our West Coast tour
right.
With the Vortex that we're doing, and we're working with some people right now in Washington. We're at Academy of Spirit this week, and I think I sent you their link. And what we're working on doing is bringing together all the people like you and me and, you know, Academy of Spirit and all of the other people who have written books and lectured and have other things like that, so that we all cross-connect and get this information out to people as cohesively as possible.
Right.
So that's a fascinating thing. And I don't think that would have happened as intensely 10 years ago as it is happening now, because 10 years ago everybody was still in the, you know, oh, it's not enough, you know, I have to have the large share of the market. But I'm
right.
seeing that there's much more cooperativeness, much more community that's happening now, and I'm wondering when that started. Do you have any clue on that?
Well, you know, I was speaking to Carrie O'Connor, you know, not too long ago, and she's got a pretty popular radio show like you do, and I believe, to be honest with you, that there's a weeding out process. Also, the ones who have started out, you know, trying to make a traditional success out of the community conscious arena are kind of being pushed to the side a little bit, and those with pure hearts are still a part, you know, of the program. And it did seem like it was necessary in the beginning for everyone to stake their claim so they could be assured that they'll be around. Mm-hmm. And I guess, I don't know if that could have been prevented as a part of the process, but I think that as the globe is shrinking and some of our issues are becoming more profoundly noticeable with the global warming and politics, and you know, everyone's beginning to realize more and more that it, like you said, is a co-creative effort. And the truly the way we're going to get to the next quantum level is through co-creation and harmony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm seeing that this is at least a possibility now. Whereas if you had asked me this maybe 2 years ago, I would have said that it's probably not going to happen. I mean, honestly, if I have to go back there, that's what I would say. And so it really helps me to see that this kind of stuff is happening, because I was almost giving up hope a couple years ago.
Right.
And now it's like all of a sudden we're all kind of coming together, and I'm seeing the purity of the heart of so many people who are, you know, bringing their community into contact with other people's communities and not worrying about whether they're going to lose their community base. It's like, no, here's my community. Let's hook up.
Right.
And, you know, let's get everybody connected. And that is so refreshing.
Yes, it is. It is. And one of the things that I was counting on, you know, because I've been in constant communication with my guides, and they said, oh, don't worry. The people that you're going to be asking to participate with you in this program are going to be intuitive like you. And so when you invite or ask or request, you know, their participation, their guides are going to say, oh, this is something we should participate in.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, that makes sense. And that's the kind of response I've been getting. There's so much intuition involved in who I email and ask to be a part of it and how people respond to it.
Yeah, I think it's quite interesting, too, your background. I mean, you know, coming from, first of all, your family background is interesting. And then becoming a pharmacist, I mean, I just cracked up when I found out you were a pharmacist.
I know. Everybody does. Everybody does. And I count on that because I really want to get people's attention. I really want to, you know, give the idea that I'm promoting right now more benefit than the doubt. And most people, they look at it and go, wow, when I saw that combination, I thought to myself, well, he's got to be a pretty bright guy, and he's doing something really unique. This really sounds worthwhile. And that's generally the response I get when everyone takes the whole picture into consideration.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing that I found very interesting when I looked at your website and such, and I thought, you know, first of all, I'm looking at your background, and I'm going, this is really interesting. To take someone who is obviously in a very, very left-brain profession and working in the bastion of anti-intuitiveness, which I know well, having been in the medical field for over 30 years, and, you know, to have someone come from that particular arena and to be doing a visionary series, I thought something must have happened. I mean, I know you're intuitive, but was there something in your life that really spurred you into this particular thing? Because it is highly unusual. You know, you're not in this for yourself. You're not in this, you know, because you have a product to sell. You're in it because you want to provide a service to people. So is there something, some one thing maybe that, like a near-death experience or something that would have sent you in that direction?
Well, you know, I would call it a dark night of the soul kind of experience. You know, I was, to be honest with you, I was always artistic and creative. I played piano and I've been, started taking piano by the age of 4 and took it until the age of 17. I was going to be a performer, singer, songwriter, and also an author of, you know, books for entertainment And I went into science because people said that you couldn't be scientific and creative. But I didn't want to not be able to have both experiences because I thought it would be really valuable. But as I, you know, grew older and got in my mid-30s, and, you know, I don't want to arbitrarize it into the old standard midlife, pre-midlife crises, but it was kind of like that. And I was concerned that some of those dreams that I'd planted in my garden of expectation were not coming to fruition because I wasn't paying attention to them anymore. And I knew how critical it was to my soul, mind, soul development, and it caused me some deep reflection and on my way back out of that realization that I could live a full life and not pursue my dreams, as important as they were to me, that really rocked my world. And the only thing that saved me was something that was a little extraordinary. And I just started reconnecting to, you know, a guide that was told to me by some psychics that was always around me, and it was a deceased grandfather I'd never met. And it seemed and felt believable, and so I started communicating with him and started getting real objective information and followed it. And then I had to start dealing with the fact that a lot of this new age thought or now age thought was contradictory to my old Pentecostal faith, and and that was enough of a distraction. And then I found animal communication as a way to explore my intuitive ability but still be appreciated for it, and then that led to more and more things. And then I started reconnecting with the fact that while at work, you know, I was picking up stuff, and that was intuitive, and I just started seeing a new value, you know, to how you can blend creative thinking into left brain thinking, and how much more enlightened and proficient I was when I combined, you know, both right and left brain.
You know, it's interesting that you're mentioning the right and the left brain aspects of it, because I was basically the same. You know, I was very artistic and creative and intuitive, and but I had to have a job, you know, because the parents said, hey, you have to have a real job.
Exactly.
And, you know, so I did the left brain thing too, you know, and went into nursing and all that kind of stuff. But maybe it's just some of us that start out playing the piano do these weird things. I don't know, because I play the piano also, and music was going to be my life, you know.
Right.
And then I realized that I really was not exceptional enough with my music to, you know, to really make that my livelihood unless I just wanted to teach piano. But in the meantime, there's all the intuitive stuff. There's the guides, there's the, you know, appearances of the ascended masters and all this kind of stuff. And you kind of go, huh, what's it all about? You know, and what can I do to help? And I figure that my guides have been pushing me towards, you know, helping the people on the earth for a long time. And I think that happens with so many of us, where if you can learn to let go and learn to realize that the disease that you feel with your life really is because you're not fulfilling your total capability.
Right.
Then I think maybe people would start looking a little bit more at being truly visionary. Because right now what I see as I travel the U.S., I have seen a lot of communities where people are behind closed doors in quiet desperation. You can feel it as you drive down the street.
Right.
And I saw a lot of that in many of the places I was going to, and I thought, you know, it's because they think that's all there is.
Right.
And yet, if they'd had the experiences that you and I have had and been able to connect with animals and able to connect with nature and with their guides and guardians, they would never be in that state. Well, first of all, they wouldn't be, you know, doing the things that they're doing. But, you know, what are we missing from those people? What kinds of gifts do we need to help on this planet right now that we're missing because all of those people are in desperation and thinking that they're alone?
Well, you know, like what you're doing, for instance, and what, you know, I'm doing with, you know, radio and connecting people through conversation. And then also people who have animals. You've got a lot of people out there who have animals, you know, to add to the quality and meaning of meaningfulness of life, because they're not connecting well with their human counterpart. I found it immeasurable. I've got an event coming up in a couple of weeks where, you know, and I've been doing it for maybe 5 or 6 years now in my area, where the Humane Society puts on several events, and I come out and people come and stand in long lines, and the animals are pretty magnificent, and their points of view are spiritual and very powerful, and I feel like that's one of the few things that I've found that is immediately meaningful to people, is doing stuff like that. And thank goodness for the animals and the fact that they're open and cooperative.
You know, I found when I did the study on my quantum vortex stuff, we had a dog in there who was a seeing eye dog. And we proved that that dog is an enlightened being. And the way we proved it is by measuring her aura with the RFI meter. And it was so amazing to see. I mean, she was a pretty great dog to begin with. But the minute that we looked at her and said, my gosh, you're an enlightened being. And we didn't know that. And we're so sorry that we didn't notice that. You know, in our humanness, we were so busy. And we started treating her as if she was a visiting dignitary. And she totally responded.
Right.
It was amazing. Yeah, it was so much fun. And we were laughing, and we thought, well, you know, at least the dumb humans finally got it.
Right. And you know, the animals, you know, they come here with the perspective, I'm here to do what I'm supposed to do. And even that part that goes unnoticed, and they seem to revel in it.
Yeah, they've been really enjoying it. And have you noticed too, Brian, that the animals are waking up more, and like even the insects?
Yeah, it's true. It, you know, and I'll tell you a secret. The more you're open, you know, to, you know, your oneness, and the more you're open to that there's no real separation or communicative separation or deficiency between you and other living things, the more you're able to directly connect their behavior, their response. Everything they do seems to make sense, not just as a response to nature in terms of instinct, but even in response to your presence and your thoughts. Now, if you're a human being with muddy thoughts and you're in your own world and you're internalizing everything, they go their own way, but they do wish you well.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point, too. It reminds me of a little cat that I found in a storm one day. It was, you know, shivering on my balcony and crying, and I brought him in, and my older cat was disgusted, but, you know, allowed him to be in. And this little cat, I had him for about a week, and he was really smart, you know, and I'd tell him once, and he got it. Well, then finally, unfortunately, his owners had posted a little picture, and he was missing. And one of my friends said, hey, down in the laundry room, there's this photo of this cat, you know, and it might be theirs. And I said, oh, man, I hate to see that, because I really like this little cat. But I called them up, and they came over, and sure enough, this cat was theirs. And they said, oh, this cat is so stupid. You know, he doesn't get anything, and, you know, he just runs rampant around the house, and we can't train him. And I laughed my butt off. And I said, that cat is one of the smartest cats that I've ever seen, and he's got you well trained.
Exactly.
That was really funny, and they were really kind of miffed, you know, that I would say that, but it was true. And I said, you know, it's really true. I mean, the cat is smart. And what I've noticed lately is when I noticed that the insects were more in a conscious state and responding to us than before, I thought, uh-oh, this is getting really interesting. and I already knew that the mammals were more responsive, but I was really surprised to find out that lizards and insects and things like that have come up in their awareness also. So that's
right.
Telling me that, you know, the whole planet is getting ready to really move into this new dimension, and we need to catch up.
Right. And you're absolutely right. And I noticed that when I do animal readings, you know, and especially at the Humane Society and all that, that what I end up doing is I start pulling together, you know, these moments of aha moments with
mm-hmm.
these humans, because I'll do the communication. I'll name maybe 5 or 6 things that happened, you know, or like I just remember this one animal said to me, my owner, you know, used to participate in this sport and he doesn't anymore, and it's all my fault. And so
aww.
I turned to him, I said, did you participate in the sport? And he says, yeah. He said, in Europe, I used to have him with me. I used to do this motocross type sport. And I says, why does he feel it's his fault that you don't do it anymore? And a tear formed in his eye, and he said, well, he got gotten sick, and the doctor did the surgery that he needed was more that I could afford, and I had to sell my motorbike to pay
oh,
for
wow.
the surgery. and so that's why I don't do the sport anymore. And I says, well, your dog, by the way, animals read your mind, and you do
yeah.
a lot of reminiscing.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, when you reminisce, you can't tell the difference between you reminiscing or regretting. So the next time you walk down memory lane thinking, boy, I had such fun when I used to do motocross, look over to the dog and say, but I made a choice that I'm not sorry that I've made. I'm just reminiscing, not regretting.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's powerful.
Right, you know, when you get stories like that, person after person,
yeah.
you know, I'm convinced that, you know, and I had one dog say to me, you're a pharmacist, right? And I said, yeah. And I turned to the lady and I said, this dog knows I'm a pharmacist. And then the dog said, and then I turned to her, I said, but and the dog says you're not taking your pills and you're acting strange. And she said, my husband has Alzheimer's, and I was under a lot of stress, and I was taking antidepressants, and my husband just passed away, and I asked my doctor if I could go off of my antidepressants, and he said yes, and I said, don't tell me you went off all of it altogether. You didn't wean yourself off. And she says, I went off, and I've been crying all day and all night. And I had to turn to the dog and say, it's okay. The doctor said she could stop taking the antidepressant pills, but she was supposed to go off and taper it off. And all of that tension, that the pills were anesthetizing her from feeling and expressing or coming to the surface now. So when she runs to you crying, that's why. It's not that she's not obeying the doctor and not taking her pills. Like, but you're right. She should not have went off of her pills altogether.
Wow. And I bet
yeah.
the dog felt better after you did that, huh?
Right. I mean, the dog was really, you know, concerned. And it's wild. You'd be, you know, it's wild. Animals
are
aware.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. Because, you know, when I go away, I have to tell my cats that I'm going. And I hate being separated from them because they're just little love bugs, you know? And this trip, I said, well, I'm going to be gone for like 2 or 3 weeks.
Right.
And my little male cat turned his back on me like, fine. And the female was like, okay, you know, I understand. And I said, I will be back. But I said, unfortunately, I'll only be back a couple weeks. And then I'm going for 4 months, which is a lot of moons and a lot of suns. And I could feel their sadness, you know. And I thought, oh, I hate this. You know, I want to go off and do my stuff, but I miss my little buddies so much because they're like kids. And,
right.
you know, I spoil them, and they just love having me around. And so I thought, well, I've got to find somebody that's going to cat sit for me. So now
right.
we found somebody who needs a place, and, you know, and she's going to be there for at least the 4 months that I need. And I thought, okay, well, they might forget who I am by the time I come back, but I'll remind them. But
well,
oh,
you know,
guys,
you yourself have to feel comfortable with leaving, and if you feel comfortable with leaving, then what you're saying to them is, I feel comfortable going, and I know that I've left you with all that you need to be well in my absence. And you just say, I'm going to do, you know, the universe's work, and just wish me, may the force be with me. And they'll be okay with it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'll do that, because I've been so worried about that, and I had a guy who said he was going to, you know, come and stay with him, and then his whole life changed, and he said, oh, no, I can't do that now, and I thought, oh, no, I thought I had everything all settled, and, you know, and then I was going, oh, okay, universe, send me the person, the right person to be here for this time, and, you know, somebody will give my cats a lap to sit on and tell them how wonderful they are, because they are like kids. And, you know, I was talking with my mother, and I said, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do about the cats, because I'm worried about them. I can't leave them alone and just have somebody throw food at them once a day. That's just not right. She said, well, why don't you just get rid of them? And I was horrified. And I said, Mom, how can you say that? These are little sentient beings, you know, mm-hmm. and they need to be loved, and they need that kind of a soul nourishment, you know. You can't just give them away.
Right. When you put everything in context of you're doing, quote-unquote, God's work, mm-hmm. you know, they will understand that, and you ask them to help you send energy out to bring someone to help while you're away. Solicit and recruit their creative, co-creative energy as well.
That's a great idea. I hadn't thought about that. Thank you. And
you're
you know, that works for everybody too. I know a lot of the listeners have pets, and a couple of them have had difficulties with their pets lately, and you know, have put in requests to have their pets get along better. You know, and they put it in with their quantum vortex things. And that is working, but I think this would give them another avenue. Just go sit down and talk with them and say, you know, doing the best I can to be doing God's work, and, you know, help me with this, because right now it's too much of a strain for me to, you know, to have to make these big changes in my life and have you guys not getting along.
Right. Right. And sometimes the animals will resent you more for not understanding how much they could contribute to the process.
Yeah.
And a lot of times also, what we're deeming as a problem or an inconvenience is really only an opportunity for them to make a meaningful contribution to the process.
Mm.
And they might resent you for purely seeing them as a problem or an inconvenience.
Yeah.
Instead of that opportunity to let the universe unfold and give them the opportunity to show themselves that they're most divine.
Oh, yeah. And I know I've had many animals in my life, from cats and dogs to horses and caterpillars and all kinds of strange things. But I can tell you that every single little being that I have been with has been sentient. And they have responded to what I have said to them and thought at them. And, well, most of the time, you know, my cats were, like, ignoring me when my husband passed away. I was in so much grief. And they wouldn't come near me. And it was like they were mad at me, like they thought that I did away with him or something. And I was distressed. And I was talking to my mom, and I said, Mom, I think they think I did something to him. And I did everything I could to help him, you know, and I said, boy, I can't have my cats against me now. You know, I'm in enough grief as it is. And I said, go talk to him, will you? So
right.
She,
you know,
did. She...
Yeah, part of it was they wanted to share in that process with you, number one. And number two, they wanted you to get over it and realize that he was still there.
Well, I knew he was still there. That's what was really funny about it, you know, because he was talking to me, and I knew that he was very close by. but still I had that grief, you know, missing the physical connection. And I realize animals don't have that. They just, you know, walk out of their body and get another one. So, you know, I did understand that, but it was like I couldn't stop the grief. And so Mom went and talked to the cats, and then they were okay.
Right, and there is a little, you know, bit of a challenge between the, you know, the human culture and the animal culture and how they see life and transitioning. And then another thing part of them was saying too is that sometimes when we humans grieve, we pull the energy of our loved ones, you know, we keep them close to earth and we make them sad too. And the cats, I believe, they're saying to me that they were upset because that he was sad.
And well, yeah, of course he was.
After he had transitioned.
Yeah.
He was sad, and he was trying. But that's not a deficiency on your part. That's just simply a part of the human experience. And the cats they're saying to me, she had so much going for her, and the love and the energy was, but. And I'm explaining to them, but it's still a little different. But they still believe in quantum physics. They believe that something can happen miraculously that can be life-transforming in that moment.
Yeah.
And they feel that you just weren't trying hard enough to get there. But I just told them, in the past and in the future, it was a challenge.
Yeah, that's for sure. Thank you. Yeah, because I mean, it's one thing to know this stuff intellectually.
Right.
But that was, oh my gosh, that was so hard. And you know, and I was doing my best not to keep him here because I knew how sad he was because we were so connected. And I mean, I had one of those really amazing things happen where I just couldn't get over my grief one night. And I was crying my heart out, and he actually banged on the door 3 times, like, knock it off.
Right.
And that's, I was like, oh, my God.
Right. That was the kind of, you know, that I was, you know, getting. And, but, hey, you know, too bad, too sad. Everyone had to let you, you know, it's your party, and you can cry if you want to, like the song
goes.
That's
right. That's right, and it's so funny, and I tell people that have gone through this experience, you know, I've been there, done that, and I've helped thousands of people with grief and grieving, and yet I had a hard time with it myself with this one. You know, pretty much anybody else would have been easy to let go, but this is my twin flame, so it was like, oh my God, that was hard. But it was so funny because I was sitting there having dinner with a friend whose husband had just died 8 days earlier. And her husband actually came and tried to tell me, tried to warn me that morning, but I didn't want to hear it, you know. And it was funny because we were sitting in the restaurant, and I had the distinct feeling that they were both sitting there next to us going, oh, boo-hoo, look at this, how silly, get over it.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it seems a little, you know, almost a little inhumane, you know, for them to immediately take the ethereal perspective and be completely out of the human experience. Mm-hmm. But what can I say? When you're back into the realm where you understand there's no separation and life and death doesn't really exist, you can't help but see it from their perspective. And thank goodness.
Yeah, you know? And see, I remember that because I've been near death 6 times. And the times that I was fully aware of it and chose to come back, I realized that I was completely disconnected from anybody in this life. And I didn't care.
Right.
And I thought that's so funny.
Right.
Yeah. And then you come back and it's like, oh, boo-hoo, here we are in the Vale of Tears. You know? I mean, you have to laugh. It really is kind of funny.
Exactly.
You know, and I mean, we go through such angst, and it's really, it's a melodrama, you know, and I tell people, you know, it's like we put costumes on, and we're playing a part in the play, and people get so angry, they don't want to hear that, they don't want it to be that way.
Right.
And I tell them, I don't know what to tell you, I've been on the other side, I can tell you what I've seen and experienced, and that's what I experienced.
All right.
And, you know, it doesn't mean it's any easier when we have to go through grief.
Right.
You know, and it's not any easier when we have to go through all the stuff we're going through on the earth right now.
Exactly. You know, I tell people, you know, as intuitive or metaphysically minded as we are, we're not supposed to try to outsmart ourselves to make the earth reality be negligible, because otherwise, what's the use? We really needed to create an experience that was real enough to distract us from the fact that we are connected, so that we could really synthesize meaningful experiences, really self-discover our divine in spite of what feels like overwhelming odds. You know, that the challenge has to be there in order to create the impact and self-discovery.
Exactly. And we become more well-rounded as spiritual beings as we go through these things. I mean, this is how we develop compassion and how we develop this spirit of inclusiveness and wanting to do everything that we can for all of the other beings in existence. And I think it's a really necessary part. So I tell people, you know, it's not really necessary for people to have a healing many times. And I think healers get trapped in this because, you know, we get the ability to help someone and we want to help someone. And so sometimes we go overboard and we force them to be healed, which is not a good thing, you know, because then we generate karma against ourselves. But that's why, because they have to have this experience.
Right. It's
a tough
process.
Yeah. It's very tough sometimes. You know, you don't want to let them go. And I finally reached that point as a healer where I just really don't care. You know, if somebody asks me for a healing, I'll do my best. Mm-hmm. And then what happens after that is none of my business.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
If they're healed completely, that's great. And if they're not, it's okay.
Right. Because obviously, you know, they need an experience and it's a perfect thing. I haven't thought about it in that way in quite a long time. But yeah, it is an experience that creates a process that's obviously necessary in that person's life. And, you know, one of the ways, you know, I do tell some people, if you really want to be healed in the classic or traditional sense, integrate this experience. Don't deny it.
Mm-hmm.
Embrace it. Ask yourself the question, what am I supposed to be learning? Do I have any issues unchecked that are in the category of self-denial?
Yeah.
And start work doing some inner work. And you're definitely on your way to what you would consider a healing or the path to enlightenment, which is the same thing.
Yeah, it is. And the thing is that people keep looking outside of themselves. And I keep telling them as I go around the country, you know, I have people that say, well, do I need all this equipment? And I keep telling them, no, everything that you need is within. The only question is, have you done your homework? And are you satisfied with as fast as you're going? Because if you're not, if you're looking for something faster, if you're really feeling anxious and you need to leap, well, then you go find something that's going to help you to make that leap. So I think that's the only criteria, as far as I'm concerned, as to whether somebody has anything to do with, you know, with what I'm doing with the quantum vortex, because it will quantum leap them.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's great. And I think that the people that are supposed to do it get led to it. It's like the people who are supposed to learn from your visionary series, they're going to be led to your website and they're going to be able to listen to all of these great people that you've got and see that there's a part of themselves in each one of those people that they listen to. That's an awesome thing, and that's why I was so impressed with what you're doing, Brian, because, I mean, you have a lot of impressive things going on in your life just by yourself, but by doing this particular project that you're doing, I believe it's really going to help so many people to start to find the greatness within themselves.
Right.
So thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing. So let's give your website again so everybody makes sure that they can get there and discover this stuff.
Yeah. It's makingitallclick.com, and I'm updating it and adding files. In fact, I've got the last file that I'm going to be adding is Neil Walsh's, and I'm going to be talking to Fred Allen Wolf tomorrow. I don't know if I said that yet, but he's a pretty cool guy. You know, physicist,
yeah.
Consciousness thinker, makingitallclick.com.
Yeah, that's awesome. So people, if you want to really get to listen to some of these people that have been interviewed in the Visionary series, please do go to makingitallclick.com. And
Valerie will be there, too.
Yeah, I'll be there, too. That was fun, too. So thank you for inviting me to be one of those. And it's just so important right now. I keep stressing to people, we are on the verge of this giant leap that we're going to take.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever we can do to make ourselves ready for that leap is so vitally important. And I want as many people along for the ride as possible.
Right. I agree. Because
so this
we can,
is awesome.
We can do this knowing what's going on while it's happening.
Yeah.
And then that's more dynamic of an experience.
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you, this hour just went by pretty fast.
Yeah.
So, would people be able to contact you about questions that they have with their animals?
Sure. You know, they're more than welcome. My phone number is 419-260-2195. Or what's better is to go onto the website, makingitallclick.com, and finding a link that says Contact Brian. If you want to get to the radio interviews, just click on the radio show link, and you'll find your way over there. We're streamlining things a bit. And I do all kinds of readings, too. I'm a medium as well as a medical intuitive. But my readings are geared towards people being self-empowered and being affirmed that they already know the answer.
Mm.
Although the information I give is still credible and fascinating, but it's tied into what you already know.
Awesome. So, listeners, you can contact Brian not only for the Visionary series, but also for readings and for help with your pets. And thank you so much for what you've told me about mine, Brian. That kind of takes some of the mystery out of it, because I kept thinking, why are these cats acting like I did something terrible? I was so devastated. I was like, don't turn away from me.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Oh, that's so many little things to know.
Right. They love you so much.
Oh, and I love them, too. Like I said, I hate it when I have to go away and be without them. And I keep hoping somebody's going to donate a nice big motorhome for us so we can do this and take the cats with, you know. And I've had a couple people offer when their ship comes in, and I'm like, okay, that's great. And in the meantime, I got to go away for a few months at a time.
Right.
But, we're all one. You know, and I know that. I've had that oneness experience many times. And because we're all one, I think that as we evolve, we get to have so much more compassion and so much more connection, you know, rather than a distance and a moving away and a not caring. We become much more caring, and we become much more connected. And I think that if I was to have another near-death experience at this point, I probably would feel differently than I have in the past.
Right.
You know, because I'm a completely different spirit now than I was then. I've gotten more well-rounded.
Right.
So
I can pass this other advice to you, that and instead of, whenever you think of your cats, they're thinking of you. And what they would prefer you to think is, just send them all, I love you. Don't send them the guilt, or I miss you, or they probably can't stand me, or they're probably wondering where I am, because they can sometimes resent you projecting that onto them. And they'll say, that's how you're feeling. Why don't you just tell us you love us and you're thinking of us, and we'll be happy with that.
Oh, I do that a lot.
Okay, so just throw away the guilt, because and actually you're projecting onto them. And they're saying, we don't feel that way. You feel guilty, or you feel concerned that we resent the fact that you're away, and that's not how we feel.
Oh, that's a great point. So all you animal lovers out there, take heart.
Right, just send love. Let them be them, and you keep your, you know, your guilt to yourself, and don't project it onto them.
Well, thank you. I think you just helped heal a whole lot of animal lovers' hearts, you know?
Yeah, because they're there for you. And that's all they want to do, is support and love you. So let them do that.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, a couple of our listeners are on the fast chat, and they're really appreciating what you're saying. And they're saying this is very illuminating. And I know a couple of them that are on, and they have animals, too. And so they're very appreciative of what you've been saying, and I am too. Thank you so much for being on the show, and we got to sign off, but thank you so much, Brian, for being on, and good luck with the rest of the series that you're doing, and we'll have to keep in touch.
Oh, we will. We will. It's only just begun.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being on, and
thank you.
And listeners, as usual, you know, I love you guys, and I know that this is going to help you guys a lot, too, for a lot of different reasons. So thank you for tuning in and listening, and as always, be happy, be healthy, and be who you really are. Nighty-night.